All right, welcome back to another episode of the Smart Capital Podcast. Today, I have a very, very special guest. And what's funny about our guest today, right? We've actually recorded before. However, that recording never made it to the public, right? This time, it's getting out. So get ready for this one, right? So just introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get rolling.
Thank you for having me back for a second time. I am Ashley Flete. I am a jack of all trades, I guess you can say. And I am very excited to have our conversation to see what we get out and what we talk about.
For sure, for sure. So one of the things, we said there's a lot of things we want to talk about. But one of the main things we want to talk about is kind of real estate in Tallahassee, what's going on with the market. And, you know, in a city like Tallahassee, you kind of have two different components, right? So you have the student housing market, and also you have, like, I guess you could say the general public
general housing population,
right? So one of the things that we know is there's a big shortage of student housing.
Yeah.
Right? So has anybody been talking to you about housing or anything about that?
Oh, yeah. especially because I work on campus currently. Right. I hear a lot of it interacting with the parents. And I will say, when you think about it and you break it down, it kind of does make sense as to why parents are now really pushing for their students to have on-campus housing. Uh-huh. You know, all parents don't have the ability to get their child a car. Yeah. If that's something they have to consider when they're staying off campus. Another thing is food, grocery shopping, these things come into play when you're staying off campus. Whereas when you're on campus, you can get a meal plan. You can put it on a payment plan. You don't have to pay it all at once. Right. Where, you know, with rent, you have to pay that the first of every month. If you get that little leeway time, you know, you're trying to make the rest of it. But other than that, you know, and as a student, parents don't want them, their students or their child, to be worrying about that while they're trying to, you know, we've all been in college trying to go to class and build your own little life and figure yourself out in the midst of all of it. So I definitely think it also leaves room for another conversation of just how the difference in preparation is in I guess what's the proper way to say it? Like cultures, upbringing,
for sure,
background.
Yeah, for sure.
As to the fact that, you know, some of the students who I know and even some of my friends who I knew while we were in college were literally finding a way by themselves, they were making it, you know, going to work, having two jobs just to get through their semester. Whereas, you know, in other circumstances, other friends that I may know, they were just like, flying through their 4 years, had no worries, parents, no cares, just put it on the card, it on the card.
Yeah.
So that definitely plays a big part.
Yeah, now it's a big factor. I mean, you know, one of the things that a lot of people realize when they first come to college is that, look, everybody's not the same.
Mm-mm.
Because, you know, you grow up in a certain neighborhood, all of y'all are kind of similar or almost the same. You get to college, it's people with different lifestyles, very, very different lifestyles.
Very different upbringings.
Very different upbringings, very different values. Just a lot of different stuff, right? So the biggest thing is, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is that, you know, there's not really that many, there's not that much off-campus housing within walking distance of FAMU.
No.
Right? So if you're going to live, you know, if you want to be within walking distance of campus, you almost got to live on campus.
Yeah, pretty much.
So if you don't have a car, there's really not that many apartment complexes, big apartments that are like anywhere near campus. Like, most people are living like far. Right, exactly. The scooter ain't happening, bro. So the good thing is, you know, there's a lot of new apartments being developed. We're actually, myself and some of my partners, we're actually working on a student housing project.
Word.
We have a lot of property around FAMU area. And this is going to be one of the first, you know, new construction projects in maybe 30 years. Anywhere near FAMU's campus, right? So there's a huge, huge, huge need. Now, this is something that I think I always find interesting, right?
Okay. Hold on. I just want to give you your flowers because, if I'm not mistaken, you did graduate from FAMU.
So I'm certainly a FAMU alum. Two-time FAMU alum.
So even more reason why, you know, I think you should definitely put an emphasis, or we should definitely talk about the importance of Rattlers, former Rattlers, you know, pouring back into not only FAMU, but the Tallahassee economy, absolutely, you know, for sure. And just the fact that there's, you know, students on campus, there's other Rattlers, former Rattlers who you look like us. You Absolutely. Resemble us. You Absolutely. Have a background that, you know, you can relate to us. And Absolutely. So therefore, seeing someone who, yeah, wasn't once, you know, walking the same hills that I was walking, and now right. is doing these major real estate projects, it's like, hey, one, how'd you do it? But two, like, cause, you know, you're doing that,
you
know, right?
You can do it, right? So yeah. I always say this, right? In my opinion, you know, every FAMU alum who is into real estate, you know, obviously who has the ability, mm-hmm. should own at least one property in Tallahassee, mm-hmm. right? If you're going to come back for homecoming, you're going to send your kids here, you're going to be sending cousins here, why not just own a property?
Very true.
Right? Just own at least one house. We have thousands, almost close to almost 100,000 alum of FAMU, mm-hmm. right? There should not be any vacant properties anywhere near FAMU's campus, right? Because just off of alum, we should be able to buy up. We certainly can buy up all these properties, and we should buy up all these properties, right? So one of the things I've always been encouraging alum to do is buy properties near the school, develop them, mm-hmm. renovate them, and either rent them out back. To students or rent them out to someone in the community, but make the neighborhood come up.
I do want to ask you, as you're saying that, though, because, of course, you know, things are easier said than done.
For sure.
And especially if you don't have the knowledge or the background about it, you may run into hurdles, or you may run into some issues, or, you know, some difficulties. Is that something you may have run into in the process of doing what you're doing? And if so, like, can you kind of just, you know, say how you kind of just solved it?
So for me, you know, the biggest thing is when I first started buying property, my first property that I bought was near FAMU's campus, mm-hmm. right? And at that time, people were like, it's crazy to buy houses over there because it's the hood, it's the ghetto, it's never going to be worth nothing. Now these same properties are worth like four times what I bought them for, right? So, you know, not only does it make sense from an economic standpoint, but it's also just the right thing to do. I was like, bro, I'm not about to keep driving past empty houses mm-hmm. every single day going to work. Like, somebody has to buy these things and fix them up.
Someone has to do it, right?
People need places to live. I mean, there's just a huge need for housing, right? So the biggest hurdle that most people are going to face is not being able to afford the houses. It's believing in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. right? Like, you saw, like, the house that I sent you, right? Yeah. That one we just got finished renovating, right? Beautiful home.
Very much so.
Very affordable.
Very much so.
$150,000, a brand new, freshly renovated house.
It's really
under
beautiful.
$150,000, right? That means your payment will be like maybe $1,000 or so a month, right? Yeah. So we're providing nice, affordable housing within the neighborhood. But the biggest thing is people just have to believe in those neighborhoods, right? Because right now, the biggest issue that we're facing in this, if we're frank, if you talk to any real estate agent, right? Let's just have a frank conversation, right? We can be honest here, right? We don't have to play around. There's a lot of people who say, I will buy a house anywhere except for the South Side. There's people who will live in a tent on the North Side rather than live in a house on the South Side.
You know, I think as we're having this conversation too, I never realized that in real estate, you're also kind of reconstructing the neighborhood, yes. or like the community.
It's the perception.
It's
you're always buying a property, but you're actually buying access to that community, mm-hmm. right? So the one thing that you cannot change about, you can change anything about a house. I can take the roof off,
yeah,
build a color, second floor. I can expand it. I can do anything, but I cannot change where it lies, right? So fundamentally, the value that you're always purchasing when you're buying a home is you're buying the neighborhood, mm-hmm. right? So what happens is a lot of people don't believe in that neighborhood and they don't see the upward trajectory of that neighborhood, then they don't want to buy, right? This is the hardest thing for, you know, people. If you grew up in the 90s, in the 2000s, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you saw certain things in certain areas.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, I'll never want to be around that type of stuff again, right? But what people don't realize is that neighborhoods change pretty much every decade.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, people who grew up in Miami, you know, if you know, like, Overtown, like, you know, all those type of areas, right? You know it for that hood stuff, right? But people who came in later know it for Wynwood.
Yes.
They don't know nothing about that type of stuff. You know what I'm saying? So now those neighborhoods that were the hood that you thought the properties were worthless, now those properties are worth tons of money.
But I'm so happy that you're touching on that, because me being someone who grew up in Miami, you know, my mom, like, she was the type of person, she don't need no GPS. She didn't care about that. She wanted to just drive the streets. Right. If she get lost, she could figure it out. And now that I'm older, I'm so thankful for that, because, you know, I really saw some things that I feel like otherwise I wouldn't. But also just the fact that it is so incredibly sad that now, I was recently reading something where people who are born in Miami, raised in Miami, who've had, you know, generations prior to them, you know, roots in Miami, can no longer afford to be in Miami.
Absolutely.
And it's like, this is all they have known.
Yeah.
Where are they going to go? Like, the just everything in Miami, when I go home sometimes, I'm like, please get me out of here. The driving, yeah. Like, you can just tell over the years that it is not what it used to be. And I get that everything changes.
For sure.
But I think that the rate at which that has happened in Miami says a lot about just a lot of things. Florida, just people wanting to be in different weather, yeah. Like all of that with real estate.
I mean, and that's what I'm saying, and that's a direct impact of real estate. So, you know, obviously Tallahassee is not Miami, so it doesn't have that same type of drive and demand. But what I'm saying is something similar will happen.
Yeah.
Right? They will. There will be a day, and we're having this conversation. There will be a day where the average black person won't be able to afford to live in Frenchtown.
Yeah.
They won't be able to afford to live in Griffin Heights. They won't be able to afford to live in Bond, any of those places, right? Because people are going to come in and buy these houses and fix them up. And they're going to raise the prices a lot, you know? So one of the things that I've always tried to do, my principle has always been this. I renovate and sell within the same tax bracket, right? So the same person that when I bought a house could afford it is the same person who could buy it once I renovated it. I don't try to create new tax brackets with my renovations, right? And I could do that, and I could frankly make more money if I did do that, right? So, like, let's say, for example, I could take a property and buy it for $50,000 and just level it and build a $400,000 house, right? But now I'm bringing a whole new tax bracket into the neighborhood. Right.
But then also it's like, yeah, you can do all the things that would make you more money, but as a person yourself, do you feel like that would even be you reaching your purpose or fulfilling who you are?
And it's not. And that's why I don't do it, right? And, you know, it's a choice, you know, because in my field, and I know a lot of people who do those type of deals. I mean, you see it a lot in Atlanta. You see it a lot in other bigger cities it's impossible. Like, you go to a place like Atlanta or Miami, you can't find any house for less than $400,000. No. But what I'm saying is they're the same type of houses that we have in Tallahassee that you could buy for like $90,000.
You don't have to tell
$200,000.
I have
the same exact house.
Friends that when I go to Miami and I tell them, like, yeah, you know, I'm in a 3-bedroom, this, that, and the third, and this is roughly how much I pay. They're like, what?
Right.
That's like, crazy. I was just at one of my friends' house when I went back home, and they were saying, I think they kind of roughly paid $2,000 for like less space than what I have. And I'm like, that's not even including utilities. No. Like, what?
I'm telling you, man, it's expensive.
That's a mortgage.
So the biggest thing, and this is why I tell people, that's the importance of buying a home, right? When you buy a home, you're locked into the price of that era.
Yes.
Right? So I bought my house in 2011, right? So, you know, that was what, almost 13 years ago now, right? So what I'm saying is I'm still paying 2011 prices for a house.
And it's
13 years later.
Yours.
You know, and it's mine. And eventually I'm going to be done paying for it, right? So that's why you want to do it, because now you're going to start the clock of you being off the clock, right?
That's a good way to put it.
Start the clock of you being off the clock. So if you want to do 30 years payments, you can obviously pay them off faster. But if you want to just take the 30 years sounds like a long time, but really the time's going to go. Right?
It does.
You're going, if you stay alive, them 30 years is going to go and go and go. And you'll really be surprised, you know, how much you'll benefit from owning a home. So, but going back, let me circle back.
I was going to say too something with us circling back, with you doing what you're doing, where you were with what you were saying about, you know, you're not selling it to someone who couldn't afford it beforehand.
Right.
Think about the opportunity that you're giving people who wouldn't have the opportunity to probably purchase a home elsewhere or through someone else in another process.
I agree. So I told someone this in the last, let's say, 3 years, I've probably flipped about 20 houses, at least 20 houses,
I've seen.
So, but I could have kept all of them, right? If I wanted to, I could have just refinanced all of them and just kept them for myself and just rented them out. But I don't want to create neighborhoods of renters and make myself just like the king landlord.
Right.
Make myself
a ton of
money.
It comes with a lot.
Being a landlord is not bad for me, but what I'm saying is it eliminates opportunities for them. Because when I sell someone a house, now they get a chance to build equity. Mm-hmm. They get a chance to build wealth. Mm-hmm. If I just rent it to them, they're just creating more wealth for me.
Right.
Right? So and I could have had 20 more people just creating wealth for me, or give 20 people the opportunity to create wealth for themselves. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? So I made that decision. Me and my partners made that decision, obviously, to create, to pass the wealth on to someone else. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those properties, like one lady, I sold her house. I think I sold it to her for maybe like 140, and that was maybe 2 years ago. That was worth over $200,000 now.
Oh wow! Right? I know she's happy.
She's very happy. She's making a bunch of money on Airbnb. She's doing extremely well, right?
And that's another thing too. I mean, I'm sure we'll go into it at some point, but just like the Airbnb, part too.
People make money on Airbnb. People make money. I got another girl who bought a property from me. She's doing Airbnb well. A lot of people now don't want to be landlords anymore. Mm-hmm. Being a landlord is a very challenging profession, a challenging job. Mm-hmm. I don't even like the term landlord, but whatever, that's just the common term. But most people now prefer Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And I understand why. And I've never done it, but I'm thinking about possibly doing it, right? Mm. Because I thought about it. It's like I own all these properties, but if someone else is in them, I can't use them, right? So, like, let's say, like, my mom come to town or one of my boys come to town. They're like, Chris, I need a place to stay. Now, of course, I got, like, 40, 50 houses. But I can't put them in somebody else's house. Right. You know what I'm saying? So, it's like, what are we going to do, right? Tetris. But if it was on Airbnb, I could just block it out for the weekend. You know what I'm saying? And say, hey, you got a place to stay. So, you know.
Best of both worlds.
It is a little bit of the best of both worlds. Now, of course, you know, there's other things that come with it, but whatever. So, last thing I think we'll talk about within this episode is something that I think a lot of people don't know, mm-hmm. right? I don't think people understand how much money is being spent every month in rent by FAMU students, right? So I'm gonna give you a quiz, right? I want you to guess.
No.
If you had to guess how much money every month
too much
is being spent by FAMU students on rent, just give me a number every month.
Mm-hmm. Too much? I don't. Couple Let's, hundreds, how, I mean, which you want, like
100,000, 200,000, a million, what do you think?
I just think it's definitely, if probably going into the thousands at this point. I think there's a lot of things to consider, new construction around the area, all over, mm-hmm. materials of all of these things aren't the same, but also just being someone who went to FAM and remembering the price. I used to pay like $300 for a rent as a right. student back in those times, and now mm-hmm. these students are paying like thousands of dollars.
So the average
for the same space.
So the average rent right now for a student housing is a little bit under 800 per room. Mm-hmm. Right? That's on average. So there are about 10,000 students that go to FAMU. So that is $8 million per month being spent on rent. $8 million per month. Right? Let's break out our handy calculator here, right?
Handy dandy.
Where's my calculator? So 8 million mm-hmm. times 12. How much is that?
96.
$96 million per year wow. is being spent on rent just by FAMU students. We ain't counted FSU. We haven't counted Tallahassee State College. So it's almost, if you count those schools as well, it's almost $500 million per year mm-hmm. being spent on rent. Right? So I always ask people, how much of that money are you getting?
None.
And if it's none,
I've always said that means
you need to get into the real estate game.
I've always said that, though. It's like, you at some point, you just realize you become sick paying for something that you're just literally paying for in the moment. Because once you get up and leave out of that spot, it's like, all right, that's it.
That's it. It's over with. And then someone else.
That's
right?
It. Yeah.
And let's keep the rotation going. So, you know, that's why I'm trying to encourage people to invest in real estate.
I do have a question. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the market, the government, the economy, however we would like to word it, is making it harder for people to become homeowners?
So the easy question to that is yes.
Okay.
By raising interest rates. Raising interest rates does not help because it does not make homes more affordable. Mm-hmm. Now, the thought behind raising interest rates was that if you raise interest rates, it would make homes, it would basically stop the increase in the price of homes, mm-hmm. right? Because homes were going up in price very, very, very fast. So they thought we increase interest rates, it takes some buyers out of the market, and then the price would come down. But the problem is the only people it affected was people at the lower end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. People who got money got money. It don't matter what the interest rate is. 6%, 7%, it don't matter. The people who are, you know, who make, you know, 30,000, 50,000, 60,000 in that range, those are people who are very sensitive to interest rate change.
Yes.
Right? So a lot of people who could afford a home, they can't afford it now, or the home that they can afford, they don't want.
Yeah.
Right? So it has
it's been more hard. Of a project in a sense.
It's very much so. So the biggest thing now that possibly interest rates may go back down is good, but the whole thing that has to happen is that there has to be more supply, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning there has to be more houses for sale. Mm-hmm. The problem is there were a lot more people looking for houses than there were houses for sale. Mm-hmm. And when you have that equilibrium off, when the equilibrium was off, then you have increases in prices, mm-hmm. right? So there's a lot more houses being built now. I'm building several houses right now. So anyone's looking for a home, please feel free to look at some of my new construction houses. And there's other people building houses. I'm renovating houses. So I'm creating inventory, right?
Yes.
Instead of eliminating inventory. So that's going back to what I was saying, mm-hmm. right? Let's say I was like, you know what? I'm keeping these houses. That'd be 20 less houses on the market that I would keep forever, mm-hmm. right? Versus me selling them. So I'm creating more inventory. And there's a lot of other real estate investors and developers doing the same thing. So we need more inventory and we need lower interest rates and we need more incentives. Now, one of the things that they said, I just saw this. I don't know all the details, but Vice President Harris mm-hmm. Has proposed creating like a $25,000 down payment assistance program.
Okay.
For first time home buyers, right? So that's something that would be very helpful.
Yes.
It will certainly make prices increase, but
the competition.
But you'll still be able to afford it, right? So, you know, it creates a good situation. It's a win for investors and it's a win for home buyers because you don't necessarily want the house to be cheaper.
No.
You want to be able to afford the better house, mm-hmm. right? Because I would rather you have a $400,000 house than a $150,000 house.
That comes.
The reason why is because when you start having appreciation, right? So if a $400,000 house increases by 10%, that's $40,000. Mm-hmm. If a $150,000 house increases by 10%, that's only $15,000, right? Mm-hmm. So that $25,000 difference per year
makes a big difference.
That's a big difference, right? So in 10 years, you know, your $400,000 house might be worth $600,000, right? Versus the $150,000 house might only be worth $200,000.
And that's where equity comes in.
And that's where equity's generational wealth, all those buzzwords, that's where it comes mm-hmm. in. That's the reality of it. So we want to get you in a nice, let me not say expensive, but a nice, you know, well-priced
feasible,
home.
Comfortable, you know,
that's
going
to appreciate well. That at the end of the day, you'll have a good amount of money to pull out. So
and won't be deep in your pockets.
Exactly. So
I feel like that's a whole nother.
That's a whole nother episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Budgeting for it all.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah. So, you know, definitely want to encourage everybody to get into the market. Get a good real estate agent. Let me kind of end on this, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I love all my realtors. I have tons and tons of realtor friends. We're all great, right? But they are not created equal, right? And some of them, frankly, are not doing their homework mm-hmm. and they're not advising people well, right?
Mm-hmm. The research.
Make sure that when you hire a real estate agent, this person knows what they're talking about, mm-hmm. right? They're advising you on a very important decision, mm-hmm. right? A
major decision, life-changing decision.
This don't need to be your homeboy, your homegirl. No. Nah, bro, we ain't doing that. We can be homeboys and homegirls.
But also, too, like, see if they are open or if they have options of consultation because sometimes, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm a vibe person. So, like, if we get in the same room, I could pick up on energy, you know, certain things. And that just may be something you just may want to have a conversation with them, you know, see how they work, how they function. Are they messy? Do they meet you with, you know, a checklist? I've sat down with realtors, and I'm like, okay, yeah, she got it going on. She got a little folder. She got a checklist. Okay, I met with people who are like, so what do you want to find?
They organize, right?
And it's
it just really depends, right? So you need a realtor that matches your energy, that matches your expectations. But at the end of the day, make sure they're competent, mm-hmm. right? Make sure they're competent
and
make
don't
sure
rush it.
There's no reason to rush, right? Anyone that's trying to hurry up and make you buy something, just get away from them.
Doesn't have right? your best interest.
Exactly, man. Look, we're not here to make other people rich. You want to make yourself rich first, then you can help other people. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, what you want to do is you want to make sure that you focus on working with someone who can educate you, who can inform you about the market, who can show you your options, but ultimately let you make your decision.
based right? off what they've presented you with.
Exactly. So these are just some key things. So don't want to keep going too long.
Listen, we could be here all day.
No, I definitely appreciate you coming through. We'll always. Be back. We back for another part
that
two.
We would.
So stay
well,
tuned.
Three.
In. Two, part three. Part three. Part two. Listen, you guys are going to see this one, so get ready. So we'll see you on the next time.
I can't wait to see it.